The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Sad news out of Dodger Town. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. LA, you want to call in with memories of Tommy Lasorda, whether you ever interacted with him. It just could be watching him in the dugout or hearing him talk about something or, you know, what kind of a character he was in your imagination. He loomed large in the American sports imagination. At least when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, he was a big deal. And by the way, a two-time World Series champion manager. Those were great Dodgers teams he managed, too. Great Dodgers teams. I was a Yankees fan, and the Yankees were stacked, but so were the Dodgers. They really were. That infield, at least, you know, forget about catcher for a second. Yeager really couldn't hit, but Garvey and Davey Lopes and Ron Say, they could all hit. Those were great teams, and Lasorda was a huge part of the American sports landscape. And by the way, remained a big kind of baseball ambassador for decades after he stopped managing. And I talked about this in the first hour, but I still, like, I used to have him on the radio on 710 ESPN in L.A. on Max and Marcellus. And I remember once I compared Clayton Kershaw to Sandy Koufax, just like, they're very, you know, they're both lefties. They're both Dodgers their whole careers. And Kershaw was in the middle of a stretch where every single year, for like four straight years, he was leading the league basically not just in the triple count, crown stats, wins, strikeouts, and ERA, but like walks and hits to innings pitched, strikeouts per nine, strikeout-to-walk ratio. Like, he was just doing what Koufax did, just dominating all those stats. And by the way, innings pitched, too. Like, Koufax would throw 300 plus, because in that day, that's what you did in a four-man rotation, and he was, you know, the best ever. But Kershaw was throwing 220-plus innings, and it was almost the equivalent era to era. And boy, when I brought that up, hey, is he kind of like dominating the way Koufax did? Tommy Lasorda, if we were off mic, I think he would have cursed me out. He got hot. Don't ever compare anyone to Koufax. And he was getting a little older at that point and everything, and he could be cranky, but... And he was, I mean, listen, Kershaw is now a champion, and he pitched well in this postseason, but he had his struggles in the playoffs. Koufax, I get what Lasorda was talking about. Koufax went from the best pitcher ever in the regular season to even better in the playoffs. An ERA under one in the World Series in a bunch of innings. But it was my pleasure to have talked to Lasorda, and was one of those guys where if you would have told me as a little kid watching the World Series, like the 81 World Series on TV, yeah, you're going to grow up and talk to Tommy Lasorda, I'd have been psyched, man. It was one of those moments like, look at this, I'm talking to Tommy Lasorda on the radio. 888-SAY-ESPN, the Max Kellerman Show presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline. By the way, Tommy Lasorda was 93 years old, led a full life. Almost 1,599 career wins. That's 22nd all time. Those regular season wins, of course, are one thing. But then he was one of five managers in the history of Major League Baseball to win multiple World Series and Manager of the Year awards. So rest in peace, Tommy Lasorda. LeBron James, meantime, had some things to say about the siege of the Capitol building in D.C., said, we live in two Americas. Day after a mob. I don't know, like, people are calling, like, pro-Trump supporters. What do you mean? Like, we need two positive pro-Trump? No. You just say pro-Trump insurrectionists or rioters. Right? Something like that. By the way, and the guy who was waving the Confederate flag in the Capitol building, which is a flag of sedition and treason, represented an army that fought against the United States of America. What do you call that? Anyway, LeBron James wondered what would have happened if the group of insurgents were mostly black. And he blamed the carnage, as most have, on President Donald Trump, who picked out the date, January 6th, and verbally and publicly directed the mob toward the Capitol building. Here's the quote from LeBron James. We live in two Americas. This is following the Lakers' 118-109 loss to the Spurs. If you don't understand that or don't see that after seeing what you saw Wednesday, then you really need to take a step back. Not even just one step, maybe four or five, even 10 steps backwards, and ask yourself, how do you want your kids, or how do you want your grandkids, or how do we want America to be viewed? How do we want to live in this beautiful country? I'll say this. The two Americas thing is plainly, clearly true. Why does it even need to be said anymore? Apparently it does. Let me just explain. After slavery, like black people were brought to this country, as everyone knows, as African slaves in chains with no choice in the matter. And then were enslaved in this country. And eventually, after the abolition of slavery, there was the 14th Amendment. And what that meant was equal protection under the law. So black people supposedly had the protection of the 14th Amendment, as all people were supposed to. But black people needed it. Okay. Then there was a ruling, Plessy versus Ferguson, if you've heard of this case, that stated, yes, equal protection under the law, but you can have separate but equal. Your rights aren't violated, you know, if you're black and not able to, for example, drink at a white water fountain, right? Because you have your own water fountain, separate but equal. And but eventually, this is at the end of the 19th century, toward the end. And eventually, in the 50s, 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education, what the court said, the Supreme Court said was, look, what in practice what goes on is it's not equal. It's separate and unequal. And that was really the story of America, separate and unequal. That was segregation and inequality. And in many ways, when LeBron James says two Americas, there's the reality of the economic segregation. You can find a black neighborhood and a white neighborhood, and there is increased levels of poverty in black neighborhoods and lower levels of education and all of that, the effects of institutional racism. But there's also separate and unequal in the sense that two different Americas, in the sense that LeBron James isn't the only one. Russell Westbrook pointed this out. Doc Rivers pointed it out. Almost everyone who discusses this topic points it out. Were that mob of rioters and insurrectionists black and they stormed the Capitol building in D.C., what Joe Scarborough, who was, before he was a TV host, he was a Republican congressman. He said, we know if they were African American, they'd have been shot in the face. That's what LeBron's talking about. You know what it reminds me of? Quickly, we're going to get to Ryan Clark because we got some football to talk about. You ever see the movie A Time to Kill? And Matthew McConaughey is a lawyer, and his job is to get Sam Jackson off the hook for killing the men who brutalized his daughter. And he was coming up with all these legal strategies, and eventually Sam Jackson told him, look, I hired you because you're white, you think like them. Talk to their hearts, basically, right? I forgot the exact speech, but... And so McConaughey, in the final scene, is telling everyone, the jury, to close their eyes. And he takes you through the horrific crime that occurred against Sam Jackson's daughter, and you can imagine what it was. And that resulted in her death. And you're thinking to yourself as an audience member, okay, it is horrible, but why would this change their minds, right? They're still going to apply the law, and they caught him for murder, and you're not allowed to do that and everything else when Sam Jackson got revenge. And then he said, now imagine she, the daughter, the victim, was white. And the jury opens their eyes stunned and, of course, acquits Sam Jackson. That's when law enforcement, when others see black faces coming toward them, there is one reaction. There's a very high threshold for casualties of those people who are coming at them. And if it's white faces, a very high threshold. NFL playoff kickoff this weekend, and we've got Ravens-Titans this Sunday at 1:05 p.m. Eastern on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN Megacast broadcast, which continues on ESPN2, ESPN Plus, and Freeform.
Browns at Steelers.
And my guest right now on the Goodyear Hotline is the great Ryan Clark, ESPN NFL analyst extraordinaire, and of course... member of the Pittsburgh Steelers Super Bowl winning championship teams. But Ryan, this ain't those Steelers. There's no Ryan Clark on this team in the secondary, striking fear into people, making them pay even on a successful play, taking a little piece of them away, taking a little piece of their will away. This ain't the same Steelers. Juju Smith-Schuster's talking about the Browns is the Browns, but Ryan, is the Steelers the Steelers?
I'm not going to lie, Max. When you said that on first take today, you heard me. You took a little steam out of wind out of my sail because I was like, oh, shoot, he's kind of right. You know, and honestly, let's be honest, the Browns aren't the same Browns. They're the typical Browns that we've seen struggle and be in the fight for the first overall pick. They're a different team. And I think Juju Smith-Schuster is just kind of giving you that Pittsburgh speak, what you feel like when you become a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the history of the Cleveland Browns. But this is a different year, a different team. And you're right, the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't necessarily the team we're used to or the team we've seen historically, but I believe that they're a better football team than the Cleveland Browns. I still remember what it looked like in that 38-6 beating early on in this season and the way that they were able to go on the top, although be it without Denzel Ward, the way Mason Rudolph found success down the field. And so if
but Mason Rudolph, wait a minute, Ryan, let's pause right there. Mason Rudolph found success down the field. And by the way, to give the offensive line some credit, they've been blocking for the run a little better and protecting Roethlisberger a little better, but it's not a good offensive line. And Roethlisberger has not thrown the ball down the field. You think he still can?
I think he still can, because let's think about early on in the season, Philadelphia Eagles, the week we all come in and we're extremely excited about Chase Claypool. Chase Claypool goes off. He has all of these catches. Those were deep balls. He started to push the ball down the field, and then something changed there in the middle, but we saw it in the second half of the Indianapolis Colts game, and I feel like some of that carryover was the success we saw with Mason Rudolph. Now, is Mason Rudolph's arm more lively than Ben's is now? Probably so, but I feel like Ben can still make those throws. It's about taking those chances, and I feel like in some form of self-preservation and some form of team preservation, they got into this dink and dunk and forgot that Deontay Johnson was a hell of a player. They forgot that James Washington was 4-3 or that Chase Claypool was a physical mismatch. And I believe they'll get back to doing those things this week, maybe loosen the Cleveland Browns up, and they may help you with the run game.
Now, meantime, this is a rematch of a game the Browns just won. They're adding Denzel Ward, and there's a lot on the line for Baker Mayfield, too. This is not your slightly older brother's Cleveland Browns, everybody. This is there's a new game in town. You know, the AFC North is Steelers, Ravens, and Browns now. And by the way, when Joe Burrow gets back healthy, that's going to be a monster division. What's the game that you're most looking forward to? I think this is an interesting wild card weekend. What's the game you're most looking forward to, Ryan Clark?
You know, and this is probably not on many people's – oh, probably is on many people's radar. But I'm honestly, it's the Ravens and the Texans. And, you know, I know people think that this is just a repeat because of Lamar Jackson and him not being
and the Titans,
in the playoffs. I'm the Titans, I'm sorry. I'm the Titans, I'm sorry. Like, you got to think, there's a 2,000-yard rusher, and his team is not the leading rushing offense in the league. That's the two teams that are battling this week when the Ravens and the Titans play. And I know there's a ton of pressure on Lamar, but I've seen him play loose. I've seen Heisman Lamar. I've seen MVP Lamar, and I think that he understands he can only go out and play this game the way he knows how, the way he knows how to be successful. And Greg Roman has also backed off of turning him into something else, trying to prove to everyone that he can make Lamar Jackson something different so he gets that head coaching job. And I think that that success, coupled with the fact that the Titans aren't good on defense, Max. Yeah, Derrick Henry rushed for 2,000. Derrick Henry went crazy against the Texans, but guess what? They needed every single yard and then some, a big play to A.J. Brown on a post route that is just inexplicable and unexplainable for you to give up as a defense to win that game 38-35.
So when I
look at the Titans defense as compared to the Ravens defense and what they could do, I believe the Ravens have the edge here, but nobody believes in Lamar Jackson. And I believe that that team, the Baltimore Ravens, win this game.
I agree. And I think it's like this. I think you have two teams. They can both run the ball. One plays good defense. The other doesn't. That's the Ravens. And here's what it comes down to for me. And it's not – it's can Lamar Jackson be Tom Brady from early in Brady's career? Which is to say, you don't have to be all world. You have to manage the game. and you have to be able to get your team in field goal range at the end of the game in a close game. Can you do that? Because we saw him do that against the Browns when he came back onto the field on fourth down, linked up with for a touchdown in his first throw, and then right after Baker Mayfield marched down the field and scored, he completed four passes and got him in field goal range. And with Justin Tucker, field goal range is like 60 yards. So I do think Lamar Jackson can come up big enough when he needs to put in a close game, to put the Ravens, you know, in a position where they need to kick a 55-yard field goal. I think the Ravens win. Ryan Clark joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ryan, what's your upset of the week?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, I would think that the Ravens beating the Titans would be an upset, but I want to say that they might be favored in this game. And the upset of the week I'm going to go with is the Rams beating the Seattle Seahawks. Mm. And now, would I necessarily bet money and pick the Rams? Probably not. But to me, of the games that I think people look at and say, okay, the Seattle Seahawks are at home. The Seattle Seahawks beat the Rams recently. Jared Goff didn't play good. He may not play this game. John Wolford may start this game. When you look at what this defense has been able to do, the Los Angeles Rams, that is, against the Seattle Seahawks, totally eliminate DK Metcalf, right? DK Metcalf has barely played his last two games.
Listen, Jalen Ramsey is a monster.
Just a monster, right? Russell Wilson has gone back more into the game manager. Russell Wilson, I'll make the big plays when needed, like we saw him down the stretch against the San Francisco 49ers. But John Wolford has a little bit. You know, he was kind of a bit more Kyler Murray in that game against the Cardinals than Kyler Murray was. And I thought Sean McVay kind of relished in the challenge of creating offense with him. And even though I talked to Jamal early on this week and he says, I see him playing, you know, I have a torn labrum. Have you ever done it? I told him I did. As we won the Super Bowl that year. If he's hindered in any way, if he can't get that pressure on the quarterback, if he can't be that spark plug and energy for that defense, I think they suffer. And I feel like the Rams, of teams we expect to lose, have the best chance of upsetting the Seattle Seahawks than any other underdog.
It's interesting because I like Seattle, but if Seattle wins, I don't like them to make a deep run. If the Rams win and Goff gets healthy, I like the Rams' chances better going forward, even though I like Seattle in the game. Hey, Ryan Clark, with me now on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Tom Brady is facing a real good front four, and he's on the road, laughably, but to a 7-9 team. He can't lose to a 7-9 team, fully loaded as he is. Meantime, Russell Wilson, people were talking about MVP, didn't play great by his standards in the second half, and you just said he might get upset in the first round. Drew Brees, Super Bowl aspirations on a really good team, in probably his last shot at it, has to play a Bears defense, which has not played great recently, but is capable of playing at a high level. Lamar Jackson facing the Titans. Can he win a playoff game? Baker Mayfield, can the Browns come up in the world? Who is the player facing the most pressure this wild card weekend?
You know, and I think people are going to disagree with this, maybe, but I think it's Josh Allen.
That's
here's
an interesting
why.
Answer.
Lamar Jackson is in a place where we already know, right? Lamar Jackson hasn't won a playoff game. He hasn't done this, hasn't done that, hasn't shown up big. Doesn't this week a loss to the Indianapolis Colts when you're leading a team that many are saying can challenge the Kansas City Chiefs for the AFC Conference throne, losing to the Colts, wouldn't that be very similar?
Yes, it would be. It's a good point. Bills are supposed to win, and Josh Allen is supposed to be an elite quarterback. You're right.
Exactly. And so now it says, okay, you went to the wild card game against the Houston Texans. You decided to throw a ball backwards to a fullback. You spun around. You made a bad decision there. Now you've ascended to an MVP level. You're a guy who is in that conversation. You're playing against a team. You should win at home. You're better than, and you lose. Now do we start to say, you know what, Josh Allen, you're a guy who we can count on for the big plays during the season, but when we get to the playoffs, you can't win a game. When we get to the playoffs, your decision-making comes in as a negative for the Buffalo Bills in that offense. And so I think many people won't be looking at him going in. But if Josh Allen doesn't play well against the Indianapolis Colts, which is possible because they are good on defense, if Indianapolis can run the football, Phillip protects it, and they lose, now you take a team that I think many would put, if you go you know, if you go Kansas City, Green Bay, or Green Bay, Kansas City, I think the Buffalo Bills are the next team up.
Yep.
If you lose early in that way, I believe now you start to question that quarterback, and is it all fluff during the season, or can he win you the big game in the playoffs?
That's exactly right. That was the great Ryan Clark, ladies and gentlemen. Breaking moves with ESPN NFL analyst Ryan Clark.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
By the way, Deshaun Watson, is he long for the Texans, or should he demand a trade? I got a lot to say about that, but before that, before covering the NBA, Ramona Shelburne covered the Los Angeles Dodgers. I want you to hear some of her thoughts on the passing of Tommy Lasorda, the great baseball manager for you young kids out there, two-time World Series champion.
Max, the podcast.
ESPN's Ramona Shelburne, Dodgers columnist back in the day for the LA Daily News. Ramona, is this the first time you've been on the new show?
I think so. Although, I mean, like, aren't I kind of grandfathered in since we hosted so many shows in LA together?
Yeah. I think, but I'm not sure that I ever knew that you were the Dodgers person for the Daily News. That was your beat, the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know, when I first started there, I played college softball, so like baseball was my jam, right? Mm-hmm. That was always what I loved, right? And it just, I don't know, I gravitated towards basketball later in my career, mostly because the Lakers were really good, and that tended to be the newsy thing and the thing that we wrote most about. And then when I got to ESPN, they said, hey, you do the NBA really well. So, but baseball was always my first love, and, you know, still is. Like, you could tell me tomorrow, like, we need to go cover the Dodger game, and I'll go out there.
Yeah, mine too. I know that baseball's not as good a sport as basketball, for example, but or not as exciting as football. I love it because I grew up with it. It was my first love as a team sport.
Me too.
Talk to me about Tommy Lasorda. You know, 93 years old, he passes his entire lifetime, basically, in the Dodgers organization. What are your memories?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that was the first thing I thought. You know, every time I would see Tommy, and this is the last, you know, we didn't go to the ballpark this year, right? I mean, there was no reason to go, and there's no fans, no, you know, whatever. And it's weird because every time up until this year, I mean, you go to the ballpark, you saw Tommy. And, yeah. I mean, man, Max, he was like 90-something, and he was really slowing down, but he was still out there. You know, he was still at the park every dang day. Because he loved baseball so much. He loved the Dodgers. I mean, and you know what my favorite Tommy thing is? Like, I hope this sound just comes across right, okay?
Yeah.
That man never stopped living. That man never stopped living hard, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see him in the press room, and he was still eating some chicken parm. You know what I mean? Like, he's already had a couple of heart attacks. And he's like, hey, as long as I'm here, I'm going to eat well.
By the way, he's right, Ramona. That was Lasorda. Lasorda, even as a manager,
yes.
He was fiery. He could get cranky. But he was also fun-loving,
oh, yeah.
And he lived to 93. So the question is, and by the way, he would sometimes, you know, his faculties were diminished toward the end, as many of ours, you know, become. But better to live to 95 and not eat the chicken parm, or live to 93 and have those chicken parms? That really was
his
style.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, let me tell you my best Tommy story, all right? So we're at, a couple of years ago, the Dodgers open up the spring training facility in Arizona. And remember, they were always in Dodgertown. It was Vero Beach, Dodgertown in Florida for years. And Tommy, you know, Tommy has stories for days. Like, he was down in Cuba. He's got stories from there, right? Okay, so he knows everything. And so the Dodgers decide, we're going to organize a bus ride for Tommy to take members of the media and show how easy it is to drive from L.A. to Arizona. And I was like, I'm going to do 6 hours on a bus with Tommy Lasorda, and he's going to tell me all his stories. It's going to be amazing, right? And all the beat writers who used to cover him said, are you serious? You're going to do 6 hours with Tommy? You're going to, you know me, I talk, okay? I'm like you, I talk. I'll tell you what, Tommy can outtalk both of us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't get many words in. I just listened. And we stopped at a Carl's Jr. along the way. I think they had like a little promotional thing there. And he had an assistant at the time. His name was Colin Gunderson. I love this guy. And Colin would always get his sandwiches and whatever, you know, took care of and stuff. as soon as we got back on the bus after he took the photos with, you know, wherever that, you know, Carl's was on the way from L.A. to Arizona, it's like out in the middle of the desert somewhere. As soon as we get on the bus, he's like, Colin, where are my sandwiches? Right? Like, and he starts, you know, just chomping on a cheeseburger or a chicken sandwich. I mean, he's like, and but he had two, okay? It wasn't one. Like, this is how he lived. This is Tommy. And, like, when you're going to live, that's how he managed.
You know, yeah, that's the thing about it, Ramona, is the danger in being a larger-than-life personality. Like, Yogi Berra was this way, who's one of the great players of all time. But the danger is that what gets retold, like right now, you're reminiscing and telling stories about Tommy. But what can get lost is he was a great manager. You know, like the way Yogi Berra became kind of, oh, isn't it fun? Like, you know, Yogi Berra was a Hall of Famer as a player, one of the best, maybe the best catcher ever. Tommy Lasorda was an all-time great manager and a respected baseball guy, not just a character, right?
Like,
do you have any memories
of... And you know what he did?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And you know what he did? He made everybody, like, the best version of themselves because he challenged them, right? Like, he got up in their face and he challenged them. And I think, like... You know, if you listen,
do you remember who his pet players were? Like, who was Lasorda's favorite?
Oh.
Who he did like? Who he didn't like? All that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, he was. He had a. You know, I think Mike Piazza was there for a while, and I think he was related to him, right? Wasn't he like his nephew or cousin or something like that? And so, obviously, any Italian, okay, any Italian player he loved. He loved Oral Hershiser. And my favorite, and this is so Tommy, okay, if you think about, like, how he managed and what he did for people. Like, he has this great story. I don't know if it's true, but he tells it, okay? Like, I said to Oral, your name's not Oral anymore. Your name's Bulldog. Bulldog Hershiser, right? Nobody's going to be afraid of Oral Hershiser. Who's Oral?
He's right, though. He was Bulldog.
He's right. Yeah, totally right.
All Hershiser did is go out and break the all-time consecutive scoreless innings pitch streak in the World Series after that. Yeah.
And let's be honest, Oral Hershiser looks like a dentist, okay? I mean, the fact that he's right. Tommy was totally right. And he just, you know, he did that with Pedro Guerrero, with Steve Sass. I mean, like, he, you know, all these guys, like, baseball is a game of failure, right? Like, you know, this is why we love it, because it's about how you pick yourself up from failure. It's about how you move on from failure. It's about how you face it, right? And I think Tommy's, like, genius and greatness as a manager was always in the way he just approached that. Like, he was just like, just face it head on, tackle it, right? Yell at it, scream at it, right? Like, you're Bulldog Hershiser. I think that's what was so great about Tommy, which was, you know, I don't know how he would have played in this era, okay, when I don't know if you could get that fiery with modern players. I don't know if he would have embraced analytics. I mean, part of me,
the answer is definitely he would not have,
about that.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Ramona.
I think there would have been a lot of four-letter words, right? You would have spilled the chicken parm all over the analytics sheets, right? I mean, that, you know.
Don't give me your analytics. Yeah. I remember, as a matter of fact, and I got to get to break, but I remember reading an interview, I want to say with Lasorda, when I was a kid, and I'm talking about, like, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And he was sort of railing against what were then analytics, as I recall. This is going back, you know, 35 plus years.
Max, the podcast. You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Should Deshaun Watson want out of Houston? The answer is yes, that's easy. Well, they gave him this big contract. Oh, shut up. Who cares? So what? Every single team that ever existed in the NFL, if they had Deshaun Watson, would give him that same contract. He gets the same contract from anyone, so the team doesn't get any credit. They didn't do anything. Duh, you give Deshaun Watson a huge contract. He's great. What's on my mind is how great, how valuable, right? When you factor in everything, contract, age, level of play, wear and tear, who you want leading your franchise, the whole thing. Who has the most trade value in the NFL? The answer is Patrick Mahomes. Let me just let you know. It doesn't matter what he gets paid. He might be the best ever, and that includes Rodgers at his best. And he's young and in his prime, and he's great. You give Patrick Mahomes, you know, credit for being the most valuable tradable or commodity in a trade in the NFL. Who's number two? Well, Josh Allen deserves mention for sure. Russell Wilson, although Russell Wilson's 32. That makes a difference. But Russell Wilson's way up there. Aaron Rodgers is 37 years old, and the way quarterbacks age nowadays, maybe he still has a, you know, he still does have a ton of trade value, but it's not like getting a 25-year-old. The number two is not Rodgers. And I don't think it's Russell Wilson who's 32. And Josh Allen's excellent. I think Deshaun Watson's even better. I think the real candidate is Justin Herbert because he has elite talent and he's on his rookie contract. He's cheap. So you get to devote those resources to other places on your team. But I think Herbert is second because Deshaun Watson is already a great player. He's a top five quarterback. And in fact, if I you want me to rank the quarterbacks right now, I'll put Mahomes one, I'll put Rodgers two, I'm putting Russell Wilson three, but with reservations, because Deshaun Watson I might want more than Russell Wilson right now. But let's say Wilson three, Watson four, and Josh Allen five. I put Watson ahead of the only guy as young as Watson who's better than him on the list is Mahomes. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Mitch in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Go, you got 45 seconds.
You got it. Thanks, Max. How you doing? I like the Mets trade. They're being aggressive there. But I think that helps my Dodgers plenty because last year they were talking about trading for Lindor. Now I know they're going to keep Corey Seager long-term because he's their best player, not named Mookie Betts.
Mitch in Jersey. Long-term. Mitch in Jersey with the East Coast accent and everything. How you wind up a Dodgers fan?
My father was a Dodger fan. He lived across from Ebbets Field. Been Dodgers since early.
So you didn't go to the Mets. Steve you Collins stayed with the Dodgers. I guess so. Lee in Idaho. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Thank you for breaking down that there's two different Americas today. That was really good radio, and I really appreciate what you had to say about that. And I just want to let you know. And, hey, Raj, I'm sorry you have to put up with this guy sometimes, but you guys are the best radio in town. And I want to say this right now. I'm a diehard baseball fan, and I'm trying to hold back the tears, you know? I grew up in South Texas as an Astros fan, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I used to remember wanting to hate Tommy Lasorda because he was with the Big Blue, you know, back when the Astros weren't cheaters and they're in the National League, you know? Mm-hmm. And I got to say, we lost an ambassador, we lost a good man, we lost great baseball dude.
Lee,
and I want to say that.
How old are you, Lee?
I'm 48 years old.
All right.
And I grew up in South Texas in Corpus Christi, you know?
Gotcha. I'm trying to think I'm trying to think of those Astros teams when Lasorda was the powerhouse in the National League. This is pre Mike Scott, you know, and Nolan Ryan Astros. You're talking about the Astros of, like, you know, late Joe Morgan and stuff like that. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to The Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.